We get things underway in the second hour this afternoon, though, by welcoming into the program a corporate performance coach, a world-renowned speaker. He's the author of Raise Your Game, High Performance Secrets from the Best of the Best, and his newest, Sustain Your Game. We're happy to be joined by Alan Stein, Jr. Alan, thank you for being with us.
Oh, my goodness. It's my pleasure. It's lovely to be with you guys.
Really enjoyed the book a lot, and it's a fascinating story of how to lift ourselves up and do a little bit better. And you've worked with some pretty high-performance folks, with NBA players like Kevin Durant and Victor Oladipo. Mental toughness, how does that lead to creating success?
Well, I've been incredibly fortunate that the game that I fell in love with at 5 years old has provided a pretty awesome life and tons of amazing experiences. And a big portion of that, as you just mentioned, was the ability to work with and work alongside some really high-performing, mentally tough athletes. And I was incredibly observant on that journey and took diligent notes. And now I use that not only in my own life, but show folks how to apply those same principles. And I would say your mental toughness, which we can certainly dive deeper into, is kind of the foundation to which everything else is built. It's that important. And there's different, you know, spokes off of that wheel. There's different portions of mental toughness, but overall, mental toughness is about as important as it gets for not only high performance, but also for your fulfillment and sense of peace as well.
And part of that mental toughness is dealing with failure and getting feedback that helps you process that failure and learn from it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, those that want to continue to grow and improve and evolve and work towards self-actualization realize that purposeful practice combined with honest feedback is the conduit to do that. So when you close yourself off from feedback, you're closing yourself off to growth and improvement.
Your book is set up in three sections, and I love the way you've organized it here. Part one is, in the moment, we have to battle stress. Part two, in the stretch, we have to fight stagnation. Part three, in the long haul, we have to beat burnout. Let's start with performance and managing stress. And you say that stress is a choice and that it's not the event that causes the stress, it's our reaction to it.
Absolutely. And I think an acknowledgement and an admission of that is a very, very healthy first step. Eckhart Tolle, who's an author, a speaker, basically a modern day philosopher, his definition of stress is the one that most resonates with me, and it's the one that I use when framing these different scenarios. And his definition of stress is simply the desire for things to be different than they are in the present moment. And ultimately what he's saying is stress is caused by wishing things were different, by wishing you had control over your environment, by wishing you were in control of the universe. And obviously we don't have control over any of those things. So the stress actually comes from our response to those things outside of our control. But the response in and of itself is within our control. So on one level, someone could look at the fact that we don't control the world around us, and that could actually demotivate them. I actually find it incredibly empowering that we keep the keys to the car and we get to choose our response to the things that happen. And to me, that is very, very liberating. And let me just say that this doesn't mean that everything that goes on in the world is to your liking and is convenient for you. And it certainly doesn't mean that everything going on is your preference. You know, that would be a completely fictitious world. What it means is no matter what happens, you get to control how you respond to it. And that's where I choose to put my focus. And that's drastically helped me reduce my own stress.
I liked your story, Alan, about meditation. And you were, let's say, a bit of a skeptic at first, but you've come around. What made the difference for you?
Well, ultimately, it was being open to growth and being open to feedback. And I attended an event back in 2017 and was surrounded by people that I had tremendous admiration and respect for, people that were really high performers and folks that appeared, you know, to be banging on all cylinders. And that was what really opened my mind to it. And what's kind of funny is, you know, I'm sure I'm going to butcher this story slightly, but there's something to the effect of, you know, this young student was talking to a monk, and the monk said, "Hey, you know, you need to start to meditate. You need to take 20 minutes every single day to meditate." And the student said, well, I don't have time for 20 minutes of meditation. And he said, oh, okay, I understand. Then you need to meditate for 40 minutes a day. And I say that with a chuckle. That was kind of how I was looking at it. I was petrified of sitting in stillness and being with my own thoughts uninterrupted for 10 minutes a day. But that's when it clicked. That's why I needed to do that.
Right.
The fact that that was something that was really hard for me. So I'm thankful that I started down that path about 5 years ago and have maintained a very consistent daily practice. And it's helped immensely. And meditation is somewhat similar to physical fitness, whereas everybody knows that if you go and join a gym and you go three times and then never go again, that it's not going to change your body composition. Well, it's the same thing with meditation. I hear folks say, I tried that a few times last month and it didn't really do anything for me. It's something that you need to stick with consistently for long periods of time. And, I bet it probably wasn't for several months before I even started to notice subjectively that I was having better emotional control. I was more grounded. I was more aware. So if you're willing to commit to it, it will absolutely pay dividends.
We're talking with Alan Stein Jr. about his new book, Sustain Your Game. I like this observation that you made because I'm a bit of a morning person myself. You claim that high performers use their mornings.
They do. And I do want to make a disclaimer that I realize not everyone is wired the same way you and I are. That some people actually, as one of my favorite authors, Daniel Pink, says, you've got the early birds and you have the evening, evening owls, folks that actually prefer late evenings. So this isn't a broad stroke for everyone. But I do know that high performers, they organize their mornings and they have routines. So even if they would prefer to do some of their quote-unquote heavy lifting in the wee hours of the night and they prefer to start their day a little bit later, that's fine. But they still make sure they start their day in a prepared, organized way. And that's what's most important. And I do believe, the way the cyclical day works, that your morning sets the foundation for the rest of the day. And I know for me personally, when I quote-unquote win the morning, I'm going to have a great day. So I put all of my focus into making sure that first 60 to 90 minutes gets off to a great start, and then I can really cruise for the rest of the day.
And how important is preparation when it comes to performance?
Well, one of my mentors says preparation is your separation. And I believe the more prepared you are for every scenario, the less likely you are to feel stressed in that moment, and certainly the higher you'll perform in that moment. So preparation is vital, and preparation is a controllable factor. I mean, preparation, for the most part, is a combination of our attitude and our effort. And, before everything that you're going to walk into, you have an opportunity to be prepared for that. And again, it's been my experience. This is one of the red threads among all high performers, whether it's elite level basketball players or elite level folks in the business world or anything in between, is they prepare. And they also understand that preparation is a sign of respect. It's a respect for yourself. It's a respect for your craft. If you're meeting with someone or you're working with others, it's a respect for them. So I hold respect as one of my main core values. So preparation is in perfect alignment with that.
Part two of the book is a pivot, avoiding stagnation. And I love the quote that you share from the guys who founded Instagram, that they wanted to be bad at something and to challenge themselves. How important is that?
Oh, yeah, I love that mindset. What I say, I kind of use the sports terminology. I'm constantly trying things that make me feel like I'm a rookie again. And I actually enjoy that. I mean, I do spend the vast majority of my time intentionally in my strength zone, doing things that I'm pretty good at and things that I really enjoy. But I make time to step outside of that and do things that are a little bit uncomfortable, things that challenge me, things that make me feel like a rookie again, for sure. And that's one of the reasons that I encourage kids to play multiple sports and to not specialize in one sport, because ultimately most kids are going to be slightly better in one sport. So if you happen to be the star of the baseball team and you see the world through that perspective as far as being one of the best players, but then you're more of a role player or a reserve on the basketball team, it gives you a completely different perspective. So I think we should absolutely spend time and invest time in the things that we're good at, but we should also stretch ourselves and do things that are really, really challenging and make us feel like we're rookies again.
And you write that one of the people that really embraces that is your friend Kevin Durant, who talks about expanding your circle. What does that mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've all heard that adage, and I don't know who said it originally. I would love to give them attribution. You know, this is probably one of the guys that's on the Mount Rushmore of starting the personal development and self-development, but kind of the mindset that you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And one, we have to have very high discernment with who that group is and make sure that we are choosing an inner circle of people that challenge us, that love us, that push us, that hold us accountable, that are rooting for us, and that have no hidden agenda. And insulating ourselves with that group of people is really, really important. But when you have an inner circle, you shouldn't be signing them to a lifetime contract. you should be open to almost using another sports analogy. Sometimes some people got to get cut from the team. Sometimes you got to sign a free agent. Sometimes you got to make a trade. So, you know, I know that my inner circle when I was in my 20s is not the same inner circle that I have in my 40s. And there's a little bit of overlap with some people, but that's different because as you grow and mature and have more life experience and gain new skills, you know, your world changes and therefore your inner circle should change as well.
And you refer to, you call it the deadly comfort zone.
Yeah, comfort zone is an interesting one. I do believe we are wired as human beings to crave comfort. You know, that's why most people would prefer to walk instead of run. Most people would prefer to sit instead of stand, you know, because those things are easier. And we often skew towards what's easy. So it actually, you have to have some intention behind trying to leave your comfort zone. And it doesn't mean you have to do that 24/7. I mean, there is a time and a place to be comfortable and cozy. You just don't want to live there because I'm a huge believer that it's when you step out of your comfort zone is when you stretch and when you push and challenge yourself to grow. You know, back in my performance coaching days, you know, if I had a player in the weight room and I would let them know, look, if you're capable of doing 8 pull-ups, and you only do 6 or 7 pull-ups, you're not going to get stronger. If you're capable of doing 8 pull-ups, and you do 8 pull-ups, and you have a teammate spot you and maybe help you get the 9th one, or they push you to get that 10th one, that's how you're actually going to improve strength. You need to be progressive. So there is a time and a place for comfort, but we just don't want to be spend too much time in that circle.
Part 3 of Sustain Your Game is Prevail, Beating Burnout. And one of the first things you talk about is the importance of focusing on steps, not the goal.
Yes, this is one of the shifts I've made in my own life these last several years that has been really, really, really helpful. And that is, there's nothing wrong with having goals. I mean, I recommend you have goals. I recommend you have clarity on what you want your quote-unquote North Star to be, whatever it is you're pursuing. But once you have that, take your focus off of that goal and put it on your daily behavior. Put it on your habits. Put it on the micro steps. And most importantly, learn how to detach your own self-worth and value and confidence from achievement and from reaching those goals. I'm a believer that if you're setting your goals appropriately, you're picking some pretty big and challenging things to shoot for. You know, I know for me, I don't keep exact stats on this, but if I had to guess, I probably reach about 50% of the goals I set, and that's very intentional. You know, I feel that if you reach 100% of the goals you set, you probably didn't aim high enough. And if you don't reach any of the goals that you set, it's going to be really hard to sustain motivation. So for me, you know, 50% is kind of a sweet spot. However, if my self-worth and my self-belief and my confidence is tied directly to achievement, then that means half of the time I feel good about myself, and half of the time I feel pretty lousy. And that's, to me, I don't want to be on that roller coaster. That doesn't sound like an enjoyable life experience, feeling lousy half of the time. So I want to learn how to just enjoy the work and love the process and let the outcome simply be a byproduct of that. So I want to make sure that I feel good about myself, whether I hit my goal or not. And when I don't hit my goal, I want to use that as an opportunity to learn, to retrace my steps, to figure out what I could have done differently, and then maybe go after that goal again.
You're right that a lot of people don't learn from failure because of the way we accept success and take credit for that, and then, well, tend to blame other people for failure.
Yeah, failure is such a fascinating one. I think, you know, I'm 46 years old, so I'm basically a product of growing up in the 80s for the most part, 80s and 90s. And I even remember back then, you know, society viewed failure as, you know, as an F word. You know, it was failure was something to be avoided. You know, you didn't embrace failure the way many people are very adamant about doing that today, which I'm in that camp for sure. You know, you tried to avoid failure. Well, in order to avoid failure, on one hand, that means you play it safe and you aim really low. Or on the other hand, it means you will cheat the system, or you'll do something unethical just to reach that goal. And I don't want to go down either of those paths. So for me, I know it's rather cliche to say, but many of these cliches floating around on social media are true. That's why they're around. You know, it's not win and lose; it's win and learn. So I look at the same thing with failure. Failure is never permanent. So if you happen to fail at something, that doesn't mean you are a failure. So you don't want to internalize that. And if you're smart, anytime you fail at something, there's a lesson to be learned. And I always believe that in failure, adversity, and challenge are usually the biggest opportunities to learn a lesson, or for growth, or for something better to happen.
And I love this piece of advice. You can't be fulfilled until you know what that looks like.
Yeah, clarity is everything. So one of the most important parts before you set goals or before you decide what your North Star is, you got to get crystal clear on what that looks like. You need, and the terminology I use, because I come from the sports background, is you need to know what winning looks like. Now, in sports, where you're playing a finite game, you know, I know we've got some NBA playoff games on tonight. Everybody has universally agreed that the team with the most points on the scoreboard when the final buzzer goes off is the winner. We know what winning looks like in basketball. It's the team that scores more points. So there's no debate. But when it comes to, you know, how you describe winning in your business, or how do you describe winning in your marriage, or how do you describe winning in other personal scenarios, it's much more subjective. I'm willing to bet if you polled 100 of your listeners and asked them what a winning marriage looks like, you'd certainly see some overlap and you'd see some commonalities, but you would not get 100 identical answers. And that's because everyone defines it differently. Same thing in business. You know, you can poll 100 CEOs and ask them, what does a winning business look like? And you'll hear some similarities. You know, there's probably something about profits in there and so forth, but you'll still get some differences. So what matters most is that each of us defines what winning looks like, or what success looks like, or what excellence looks like to us. And then we get crystal clear on how to define that. And then we design our lives around reaching the North Star that we just created.
Well, it's a terrific book, each chapter with some great action steps that you can take to make progress on all of this. The book is Sustain Your Game, High Performance Keys to Manage Stress, Avoid Stagnation, and Beat Burnout. Alan Stein Jr., the author. Alan, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, this was so much fun. Thank you. I appreciate you.
Alan Stein Jr. on Downtown.